Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to Off Grid Christianity, a weekly podcast for those who go or don't go to church, and where we can meet and hear from those that have made the faith count. This podcast series is to encourage via conversation. You can contact us as well by email, ogc@accessradio.biz, accessradio.biz, and biz is spelled B-I-Z. So welcome to a special Off Grid Christianity podcast for Easter. A previous guest, Jeannie Kendall, has a new book to be released on the 10th of April. It is called He Refreshes My Soul, Verse by Verse Reflections on Psalm 23, and is published by Authentic Media. Most of us would know maybe one verse at least, especially the opening line, The Lord is my shepherd. What about other verses that come to mind? And why is Psalm 23, out of all the 150 psalms, so popular and memorable? Why do Celtic Christians read Psalm 23 on Holy Saturday? When is Holy Saturday? Why do many other Christians read Psalm 23 throughout Holy Week? It'll be read as part of this year's lectionary on Good Shepherd Sunday. But when is Good Shepherd Sunday? And what other links are there between Psalm 23 and Easter itself? All these questions gives me great pleasure to welcome back Baptist minister and former president at Spurgeon's College, who taught on their pastoral supervision course, an all-round good chocolate Easter egg, and the author of He Refreshes My Soul, Jeannie Kendall. Jeannie, thanks so much for joining us again today. For those that know nothing about you, where are you speaking to us from today, please?
So I'm speaking to you from the South Dorset coast, and today it's sunny, although the last few days has been really windy and grim, actually. But this is where I live now, fairly short walk to the sea, which is wonderful.
Well, listen, let's go for it straight away, if that's okay. So what are the links between Psalm 23 and Easter? Where should we start?
Oh, my word. Well, it's such a huge topic, isn't it, Martin?
Yeah.
I wonder about starting about where you started, actually, which is why is Psalm 23 so memorable to everybody?
Great stuff. Off you go, then.
Well, sadly, many people will know the psalm actually from sad occasions, from funerals, perhaps, of a loved one, or hymns that were sung at funerals of a loved one. Sometimes from hospital visits, if you've had the chaplain come to visit. So that's actually where some people know it. But in fact, it's used at a lot of public occasions. So it was used at the wedding of Queen Elizabeth II and also at her funeral.
Ah.
George Bush actually quoted from the psalm after the awful events of 9/11, which is something people don't always realise.
Yeah.
On a lighter note, it is the song of West Bromwich Albion, and it's sung regularly at the Hawthorns, which is great. So people can know it actually from all sorts of different public contexts, but also from many varied kinds of music.
Yes, West Bromwich Albion fan is known as a baggy, and quite often you will see their banners, their flags, with either Psalm 23 written on it or a line from it, like "He leads me to green pastures" or something like that, isn't it? They often use.
There we go. Even a football fan like me has things to learn.
Well, let's go a bit further then. I did say that Celtic Christians read Psalm 23. I suppose if we were talking football, we'd say Celtic Christians, but it's Celtic Christians, on Holy Saturday. And when is Holy Saturday, first of all, and why do they read it then?
So Holy Saturday is the last day of Holy Week. It's the day that falls between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And at its simplest, really, it's kind of a day of waiting. Some people call it Quiet Saturday, or it's got lots of different names, actually. The women were waiting. The burial of Jesus had been done rather hastily on the Friday because of Sabbath arriving. And in Jewish culture and faith, you can't do any work on the Sabbath. So they had to wait until the Sunday morning to be able to go and properly attend to Jesus' body. So they were waiting, really. There's a little bit of a mystery from Jesus' perspective, if you like, about what happened during that time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a curious verse in 1 Peter 3, which talks about Jesus making proclamation to the imprisoned spirits. So some people believe that during that time, Jesus was going to those people who had died before he had been alive and ministering.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, we don't know. That's all rather a mystery as to what was happening between his death on Good Friday and his resurrection on Easter Day. That's Holy Saturday.
It's interesting, isn't it, that you can read so much more into it. I suppose if we knew the answers to everything in the Bible, then we wouldn't know much about God at all, because we'd be God if we knew everything. Would that be a fair comment to say?
Well, I guess we would, or we would just have a kind of tiny bit, because actually the Bible is only a tiny bit anyway, isn't it? God is so much more vast, so much more incomprehensible. So I think if we did understand everything in the Bible, the danger would be less that we'd be God and more that we'd be horribly arrogant, because we would think that we knew everything.
As if there'd be Christians today that would be arrogant.
Never, never, Martin.
Moving on. By the way, why did you want to write this book in the first place?
Well, it's funny because this is my fourth book and they've all had a bit of a story attached to their birth, if you like. And it came about because I was asked to preach on just a few words from Psalm 23. And I kind of looked at this tiny phrase and thought, oh, my days. You know, when you preach, you want to have enough to go on, really.
Yeah.
So I was slightly kind of horrified, if I'm honest, preaching at our home church here in Christchurch. But when I actually started to look into it, I realized there was so much more. And then I was asked to do a minister's conference up in the Northwest. And so I thought, oh, I'll take the whole psalm and maybe look at it a bit more in detail. Finished the conference, didn't really think any more about it. And somebody on the last day came up to me and said, so I guess this is your next book. And it was one of those, oh, moments, because I honestly had never thought of that. And then I realized that because it is such a wonderful psalm and there is so much in it, much more than most people realize when they hear it. I thought, yep, that's it. I'm going to go for it. So this is the result.
Well, let's go for it in more detail then. Let's roll up our sleeves and go for it big time. So where are you going to take us first of all then? What should we do?
We talked about what Holy Saturday was, but we didn't talk about why Celtic Christians actually read it at that time.
Yes.
And it's really because Holy Saturday represents that moment in the psalm when David talks about walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Which we could talk about that in detail too, because it's an extraordinary verse. But at this point on Holy Saturday, Jesus is between death and resurrection. There's a sense in which he's walking through that valley. And the final verse of the psalm talks about living in the house of God forever. So that's the moment, if you like, of resurrection in the psalm. And so it's that in-between time which is represented in those verses in the psalm, and hence why it's read on Holy Saturday.
Well, you mentioned Celtic Christians reading it. Let's look a bit further to why, and you've already given a certain line from the Psalms, which is another famous verse, and I suppose people would have known it, certainly my age, from a certain hit. It's called Gangster's Paradise by Coolio, and he talks about, as I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. What does this verse actually mean, please?
Well, it's an extraordinary verse, and part of how we understand it, or at least try to understand it, is based around when we think David wrote the psalm. And the answer to that is we don't know, but it makes a difference as to how we think about that verse. So some people believe that he wrote the whole psalm when he was running for his life from King Saul. And in that case, this particular verse would make sense because he would have made his way through many, many dark valleys, obviously being very aware that Saul's people could come at any moment out of the rocks and capture him, kill him. So that's one possibility. I actually think that this psalm may have been written towards the end of David's life, and therefore he's looking back at his whole journey rather than just one specific bit, and that the psalm in a sense traces the journey of his life with the different elements that there were in it. In that case, the valleys could be many. David's life was quite colourful. He's known, of course, from disastrously making complete mess at one point by having an affair with Bathsheba, who sadly gives birth to a child. I say sadly because the child died, and actually of killing her husband. You can't go much more wrong than that, really, as a king. And so he wrote Psalm 51 as a result of that. And so it may be that the dark valley is referring to some of the difficult times that he made, where he made a mess of his own life. Or it may be dark valleys where he was being pursued, or all kinds of events that took place during his life. So it's a kind of looking back, recognizing that every dark valley that he went through, nonetheless, God was with him. And he talks about his rod and staff comforting him. And we might want to talk a bit about what the rod and staff actually mean.
Well, go for it whilst you're on the roll.
So a rod and a staff were both things that a shepherd boy or girl, because it was normally the youngest in the family that did the shepherding, and they would choose specially sticks that fitted with their hand and kind of worked for them. And they used them actually for various things. And there's some really lovely links with other bits of the Bible. One of the parts of the Bible talks about passing under the rod, and it's a bit of an odd phrase. But what a shepherd would do, they would take their rod and very gently part the wool of the sheep. in order to look underneath to see, is the skin healthy? Are there any ticks? Is everything all right? And obviously, if it wasn't, then they were able to heal them, to restore them by the quiet waters. And so it's that sense of God gently looking inside at kind of what's really going on with us and saying, okay, in my case, Jeannie, we need to sort this out. We need to look at this together. So it's a really actually rather beautiful kind of symbol of God's protection and his care. The staff, of course, they used a lot for protection, pushing away or throwing at wolves and so on with the sheep. But they were also used to gently lift up lambs. So if a lamb needed to be reconnected with its mother, because the shepherd wouldn't want to handle the lamb too much, so to kind of put the shepherd's perfume on the lamb, they would gently lift the lamb, put it close to the mother, ready for feeding. So again, it's a really, really tender picture that even in the darkest valley, God is doing those beautiful things with David and with us.
Wow, that's brilliant. Obviously, we'll then link these verses to the New Testament and Jesus' life in a few minutes. But another verse that comes to mind, and it's in the first two, three verses, where it says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. Shortly after I became a Christian, I think someone said, well, that's the idea. You know, when you lie down, you should be able to sort of pray and just feel more of God's presence with you. What do you take on that verse?
Actually, literally, it means to sprawl in green pastures.
Right.
It's beyond lying down. It's kind of as relaxed as you can get. And of course, there wouldn't have been many green pastures for the sheep because it's a dry land. So it actually wouldn't have been a very easy thing to find green pastures. We have this picture of the sheep and the lambs running in this beautiful new grass.
Yeah.
Well, we have that. You don't have that in Palestine. So actually, to search for green pastures would have been quite something in itself. The shepherd would have had to really look for them, lead the sheep and so on. So by the time they got there, they would be very ready to sprawl. Although sheep lie down quite rarely, actually. They have to be various conditions fulfilled for a sheep to lie down.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's lots of things that stop them. They're quite, because they're a flock animal, if there's a disturbance in the flock, then they don't like to lie down. Obviously, if they're hungry, they don't lie down because they're off looking for food. If there's something that irritates them, they've got ticks, they don't lie down. And I think as people, we're a bit like that, aren't we? We need certain conditions to be able to really rest. Certainly, I'm not somebody who rests easily. I'm a bit manic, always on the go. This picture for me is an important one. But of course, if we don't lie down, sprawl with God and in the simplicity of rest, then we're not going to function very well as people.
Got you. Did also mention at the beginning about the lectionary, and that Psalm 23 will be part of this year's lectionary on Good Shepherd Sunday. Tell us more about Good Shepherd Sunday, and for those that don't really know what a lectionary is, what is it, please?
You know, you're going to have lots of lectionary experts now who are going to kind of message you and say, she's got it all wrong. I'm a Baptist. We tend not to use the lectionary very much, but it's a setting out of certain Bible passages for certain weeks of the year, and that will include readings and responsive readings. And certainly Psalm 23 is often a responsive reading, so the congregation and the leader will join in together. Holy Saturday is the fourth Sunday of Easter. So on this particular year, it's in April, 4 weeks after Easter. So Easter Sunday is the first Sunday of Easter. Good Shepherd Sunday is the fourth. Interestingly enough, on the fourth Sunday in Lent, the same psalm is used. So they're almost like kind of bookends in the lectionary, which is really interesting. Obviously, he's celebrating, as you'd expect, Jesus as the good shepherd. He spoke about being the good shepherd who laid down his life for the sheep. That's more than just a nice image, because the Bible talks a lot about bad shepherds. The leaders of Israel at one point are condemned as being shepherds who only care for themselves and not for the sheep. And God says at that point, I think it's in Ezekiel, that he will himself become their shepherd because the leaders haven't led well, which is in every era is a kind of salutary reminder, isn't it? Not least in our own era, without getting remotely political. Good leadership is a biblical principle. So Jesus is both the good shepherd, the ultimate leader, but also the one who makes the ultimate sacrifice.
As far as shepherding is concerned, I've got a feeling that you've never been a shepherd in your life?
I haven't, although growing up in Cornwall as I did, see a lot of sheep.
Yeah. But shepherding, I would have thought, in the 5,000 years since the psalm has been written, I suppose it's 5,000 years, I'm just guessing here. And in more than 2,000, anyway, shepherding hasn't changed that much because, you know, they didn't have 4x4 quad bikes in those days, so you can forget that. All the hand-me-down knowledge has been passed down. That's why we know so much about why they would have used the staff, why they used the rod and things like that from all those years ago. Would I be right on that?
Yes, you would. And Philip Keller wrote a really good book about, which is called A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. And he had been a shepherd, bit of a classic, been written a long time ago now. I did have a few people who are shepherds, actually, talk to me about it. When I went up to the Northwest, there were some people there who were actually shepherds or who had links with shepherds. So that was interesting. And yeah, some of it, of course, has changed. They didn't have the quad bikes. The landscape, of course, was different in Palestine, which is why we can misunderstand about the green pastures, as I said a few moments ago.
Yeah.
But much of it was still the same in terms of the care of the lambs, the necessity of finding good pasture, being careful to get rid of weeds, so that the part that talks about laying a table in the presence of my enemies, the table in the time when David wrote was a kind of raised platform on which the sheep could eat. And the shepherd had to clear an area of all the weeds. There are certain weeds that would be quite poisonous to them. Some things change in the landscape, but the care of lambs, there was a program recently actually on television which showed some lambs being born, and sadly one of the lambs died, and the distress of the shepherd, you know, who was seeking to bring life into the world, and that one didn't work. But then the joy of the lambs that were born well, and yeah, you know, just the delight of that kind of pattern of nature and of God's gift.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, lambs then become sheep, which we get wool, we get loads of things from them. It really was an important, and still is, important animal in the food chain, the human chain itself, I would have thought.
Yes, huge image biblically, of course. But some people say that when Adam and Eve, and we may or may not take the story literally, but when Adam and Eve sinned, and it talks about God clothing them, which is just such a kind act, actually, by God, in their vulnerability that he clothed them. And some people think that the skins that were used would have been sheepskins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're right from the beginning, it's been there. And many of the big biblical figures were keepers of sheep.
Let's move it on then to Jesus' time. What links can we now have with Jesus and Psalm 23?
Well, the reason that people other than Celtic Christians use Psalm 23 around Easter, and a lot of Christians will read Psalm 23 during Holy Week, is there's something in the tracking of the psalm that reflects what's happening during those last days of Jesus's life, particularly as we've spoken about walking through the darkest valley and then walking through into resurrection. So there's that very profound link. Interestingly, though, and it's not something I guess that's much spoken about, there were moments of green pastures for Jesus. The relationship that he had with Mary, Martha and Lazarus, and the beautiful story about Mary anointing Jesus not long before his death, where he talks about her preparing him for that moment. Really important not to confuse that with the story of the sinful woman who anoints Jesus earlier in his ministry. Anointing was regularly practiced. There would have been more than one occasion when that happened. So really important not to confuse those. But there's something there about, you almost wonder whether the perfume with which Mary anointed Jesus would have somehow lingered on his clothing, because it would have been very strong.
Yeah, yeah.
Through. So as he was going through all the difficulties of Holy Week, the anger of clearing the temple, the cross-questioning from the teaching on the Tuesday, and then the awful, awful events of the Last Supper and the betrayal and the arrest and so on, that it's almost as though that anointing, kind of that perfume, would have sustained him through, like almost like a green pasture as he went through that week.
Let's look more then regarding Psalm 23. What sticks out in your mind on this?
Well, I think it has to be from John 10, which we've already kind of talked about briefly, but where Jesus talks about being the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. And he uses the image in another place of talking about being the door of the sheep, which is a rather curious image, you know, when we think about doors. because we think of something very solid. But sheep in night time were kept in a pen, and very frequently the shepherd would lie across the entrance to the pen, obviously to make sure that the sheep didn't escape. Sheep are notoriously good at wandering off. Malk and I once on holiday saw a sheep that had got itself the other side of fencing on a cliff. And we were quite worried about this sheep. I'm sure it was rescued eventually, but it was a sheer cliff and it was on the edge of the cliff with the fence on the other side to protect it. And they're very, very good at wandering off. So the shepherd will lie across the entrance to keep the sheep where they should be, but also, of course, would then be very alert to anything that was going to come to damage or steal or hurt the sheep. And Jesus talks elsewhere about the devil being one who will seek to steal and destroy. So it's both an image practically of what shepherds did, but also spiritually for the way in which Jesus can protect us from the attacks that will come.
Well, the book is called He Restores My Soul. Jesus mentioned this on the cross.
Well, it's actually the psalm before that Jesus mentions on the cross. But the reason that probably links is we put in the chapter breaks. You know, the chapter breaks wouldn't have been there originally. It would have been written on a scroll of parchment and gone from one thing to the next. And Psalm 22, which is the one before, is where the words from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Those awful, awful words of vulnerability and dereliction and pain come from. And Psalm 23 does go on to a better place. And it would seem that Jesus would have had that psalm, the whole of that psalm in his mind, but only has the kind of strength to begin it. But in their thinking, the two psalms would have been all of a piece, really. And the wonderful thing about the psalms, which we tend to forget, is they form the Hebrew worship book. You know, we tend to read them as just as psalms or use them in worship read, but they would often have been sung responsively. They were part of worship, and we sometimes miss that when we talk about any of the psalms, including Psalm 23.
We mentioned John 10 already regarding he being the good shepherd and laid down his life. Talk about the crucifixion as well, as in the ultimate sacrifice. Lambs, sheep were used in slaughter. What can you tell us about the sacrificial way that they would do that?
Yeah, so that would have been incredibly significant, actually, at Easter time, because they had daily sacrifices at that time. They were called the Tamid, and they were made at 9 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because the sacrificial system was really about wanting to make peace with God. And they had to be lambs without blemish, were sacrificed as a way of appeasing God, if you like. And of course, that links with the timing of the crucifixion, quite possibly. It would certainly appear that noon was a significant time, because that's the time when darkness descended. And then it would appear that 3 o'clock kind of linked with the time of Jesus's death. It was at the time of Passover that Jesus died, an incredibly significant time for Jewish people, remembering the Passover lamb from Egypt when they escaped from slavery in Egypt. We're not sure exactly when the Passover lamb was sacrificed, whether it was on the evening before, on the Thursday, or whether it would have been on what we call Good Friday. But certainly it's around about the time of Jesus's death. And that's a huge symbol of liberation. And for us, of course, we see Jesus's death and resurrection at Easter as being our liberation, our rescue, not from Egypt, but from all the other things that would bind us and keep us from God.
You mentioned David looking back on his life, and he might have written Psalm 23 as a result of that. We don't know exactly when he wrote it, but it's like he's looking back at his different life stages. What comparison can you use to yourself and to people in the New Testament doing a similar sort of thing?
Well, certainly I can look back at times in my life when, yeah, those different things have been the case. I love the way in which the psalm transitions. So it begins with "The Lord is my shepherd," which is very personal. And I think we kind of take that for granted. That's a massive statement. You know, the Lord, the person who made the universe, who birthed every star, who holds the planets in their place, who creates the sunset every night, that is who is our shepherd. You know, it's a phenomenal image. But then as the psalm continues, it becomes more personal. So it's then "you laid a table before me in the presence of our enemies." So it becomes even more personal as the psalm continues. And certainly I recognize, I guess I'm like all of us, my relationship with God waxes and wanes. There are times when it's much closer than others. I recognise times when I've needed periods of rest. I certainly recognise dark valleys. Laying the table in the presence of my enemies, now that's an interesting one, isn't it? You can see that in relation to Jesus's life, God providing for him in the presence of his enemies. We're not perhaps comfortable as Christians talking about presence of our enemies, but it's a fascinating verse, and we could probably spend a whole podcast just on that verse. But one of the things I came across when I was looking at it was there's an old saying that talks about thanking your enemies for the things that they have taught you. I mean, forgiveness is a huge issue, and sometimes I think it's a lifelong journey if the hurt's been very deep. But I think in lesser hurts, that idea of thanking people, not to them, but you know, internally, for the things that they've taught us, helps us to move forward sometimes.
Well, talking of forgiveness, we did a podcast recently with Sarah Hall, who is a therapist from America, who specialises in forgiveness, especially after what she went through with regard to, have a listen. It is incredible. It explains more about forgiveness and all the myths of what people think forgiveness is and how you should deal with it accordingly. So yes, that was just from a few weeks ago. But something you said there regarding the very first few words, the Lord is my shepherd. There's a very good paradox there, I think, because the worst job you could have, I suppose, in Jesus' time was a shepherd, wasn't it? Well, maybe a tax collector as well. But it's not as if he's giving the Lord this really fantastic job. He's giving him a shepherd job.
It's slightly more complex than that. I mean, you're absolutely right. And when people talk about the Christmas story, they will talk about, you know, the shepherds being outcast and so on.
Yeah.
They were and they weren't. They were in a tricky position because their work with the animals meant that they weren't ritually clean to be able to be engaged in worship in the synagogue and temple. So that's true. So in that sense, they were on the edge. But it was also in some ways quite an honoured profession because they were preparing the lambs for the sacrifices. And because God in the Old Testament talks about himself as the shepherd and the shepherd of Israel and talks about shepherds in terms of leadership. So it's actually a complex picture, really, of what it means for God to be our shepherd.
What's your favourite verse out of all of them?
Oh, well, that will depend the day that you ask me. I mean, genuinely so. There are days when he makes me lie down, sprawl in green pastures is very much the feel I'm after. There are days when, you look at the state of the world and the thought of dwelling in the house of God forever is quite appealing. This particular day, I think it's probably, it's probably green pastures today. I've had a really busy week, so I'm kind of looking forward to a bit of sprawling, but it won't happen till next week.
How prophetic do you think is Psalm 23 regarding Jesus coming and the resurrection?
You know, that's a really tricky one because it's so tempting with all of the Old Testament to look back and to see Jesus in it. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think most certainly, as we talked about, it reflects the journey of Jesus's life in general and Holy Week in particular. I do think we need to be careful because when the Psalms certainly were written, you know, David didn't have in his mind, in the future, God is going to do some amazing thing. He had in his mind the immediacy of his own life. And I guess that's true of us too, isn't it? That we live in the moment that we have. God is weaving a much bigger picture, a much deeper and more colourful tapestry from our lives and the lives of others that we don't yet see. So I guess it's a kind of a little bit of both, really. God knew when David wrote the psalm that this was going to be hugely significant, but I don't think David had a clue.
Yeah. As you say, and as we've said it right at the very beginning, how often this psalm is used throughout Easter. What do you think is the majority verdict as to what people will get out of Psalm 23 this Easter time?
That's a really good question. I hope that people will see a little bit more deeply, because it's a journey for all of us, the extraordinary nature of what Jesus did for us. I think we often, as Christians, we have Palm Sunday and we have all the celebration of that and the joy of that. And it would have been a joyous occasion for Jesus and for the disciples, although for Jesus, of course, very much tinged because he wept over Jerusalem. He sobbed over Jerusalem. But we tend as Christians sometimes to go straight from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday, and then we miss so much of the richness of all that happened in between. And just as Psalm 23 is this extraordinary journey through many different pastures, through many different seasons, because the psalm is very much in different seasons. So all of those, in a sense, are represented during that last week of Jesus' life. And at our peril, we jump from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday. So I hope that people will engage a little bit more, both with the psalm, but also with the richness of all the different elements of Jesus' last week, which mirror the different elements of our own lives, moments of celebration, moments of confusion for those around Jesus who didn't understand his teaching, moments of rest and friendship, moments of betrayal, and ultimately for us all, of course, death will come. But knowing that Jesus has gone through that to resurrection puts a whole different kind of colour, a whole different perspective for us when we look at our own mortality. Mm. Hugely rich and so often missed.
As we conclude then with our mini podcast for Easter holidays, what did you get out of this from writing the book and reading the Psalm 23 more than once, I would have said?
Yes, definitely more than once. And I'd encourage people to read it in different versions, actually, because that helps bring the freshness. I think it brought me to a real love of something that was so familiar, because as a minister, obviously, I have used it a lot in funerals and pastoral visits, and that's beautiful. But to realise the incredible richness of it just renews again that sense of love for the Bible, which, if I'm really honest, and I'm sure this is true of all of us, there are times when Bible reading becomes a bit of a chore, you know, and we feel bad if we don't do it, but if we do it, it's just like a tick box. So to be reminded again of just extraordinary nature of what's in the Bible, the honesty, the way that it's so close to us and the way that we live our lives. I think that there were lots of individual bits that struck me as quite extraordinary as I went along, and hopefully people will find those in the book. But yeah, just refreshing again that love that even something that's familiar as certainly parts of the Bible are, can be brought wonderfully to new life by God's Spirit.
You can't leave us dangling like that. Obviously, you can tell us where to buy the book in a minute, but out of all the things that struck you, what was the biggest thing you got out of this for you going, wow?
Yeah, I mean, there were lots. I think to draw from the hopeful end of the psalm, just to give a little bit of a teaser for the book, in the last chapter I talk about dragons. You'll have to read the book to find out why. I know you have read it, Martin, because you kindly put an endorsement at the beginning of the book.
Mm.
I think to look again at the topic of hope, our world needs hope. And the final verse, of course, is just full of it. And it was the verse when I came to it that I was thinking, oh, gosh, I think this is going to be quite difficult to unpack and to talk about. There's lots of symbolism in the rest of the psalm, things where you can explain the context and the original meaning and all of those things. But when I got to that bit, I thought, oh, I don't know. But actually to rediscover that sense of hope and the link with the wonderful verses at the end of Revelation where God makes everything new and wipes away every tear. This world needs hope, and there's wonderful hope actually throughout that psalm, but particularly in the way that it ends.
And for those again, go on then, plug your book, Jeannie. There's more.
So it's called He Refreshes My Soul, Verse by Verse, Reflections on Psalm 23. It's out on April the 10th, published by the wonderful, I have to say, because they're just fantastic to work with, people at Authentic Media. That's it, available in all the usual places.
Yes, exactly. And you said hope, and I was just thinking, well, this could be when people read it. This is A New Hope, which is also the subtitle of a Star Wars film. So your next book is, how can we reference Psalm 23 into a Star Wars film?
Well, only you could, to be honest.
Jean, it's been brilliant as always to hear your wise words. Thank you so much for sharing this mini podcast on Psalm 23, and hopefully it will just bring more relevance as to what Easter is all about. And it's not just about being an all-round good chocolate Easter egg. Jeannie, thank you for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And if you haven't already hit the like and subscribe button, please do. Next time on Off-Grid Christianity.
Who was going to be his successor? Had we ever thought about it? Had we planned? Bible Society down there for their chairman. They know for the next 3 years who's going to be the chairman. But he's not the chairman. He's the deputy chairman. So that when he comes in as chairman, he doesn't have to run to catch up. And it's the same in local church. We don't think through who's going to be the next church warden or who's going to be the next... sort of. Are we kind of thinking through who's going to be the deputy organist? What are we doing about young people and going into training to come in to be a Bible reader in the church? We've got to think more of training and also of further afield, what's going to happen over the hill. Because one of the things I've always looked at, I want to know what's happened, what is over the hill. I really do. That's one of my pet thoughts. And I know that is a God-given thing, but at the end of the day, I think God's used us and uses us in these situations whereby he causes us to use our sanctified common sense. And that's what a lot of us don't use.
So please join me with our special guest, former Secretary of Evangelical Alliance and also a director of Spring Harvest, Colin Saunders. And wow, what a man. Until then, cheerio.